Today's episode is brought to you by Musical Theater Radio's merch store. Looking for that perfect gift for someone or just want to treat yourself to some great musical theater themed merch? Head to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the All Things Theater button on the homepage and check out all the different designs available. And now, today's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. Today is another Discover a New Musical edition where you, the listener, and me, the host, get to learn about a new show together. If you are in and around Claremont or Longwood, Florida, the first 2 weeks of May of 2024, you might want to check out the new musical, The Last Adam, a reimagined story of Jesus for today's generation. To tell us more about themselves and the show, let's welcome one half of the Last Adam's creative team, George Livings, to the show. George, hello.
Hello, good morning. I'm not sure if it's morning. Is it morning?
Depends on when you listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Well, hello. Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Exactly. So before we get into a little bit more about you and the show, I want to get a 30-second bio. I always ask for a 30-second bio. So who is George in 30 seconds?
George Livings, originally from London, went to drama school in London for 3 years, went out of drama school, went into Kiss of the Spider Woman on the West End, Forever Plaid with the original four guys from New York. There was another show called Out of the Blue, Maxwell, that all closed before they opened, which then helped me get into Godspell, the national tour. I was the understudy for Jesus. An Australian soap opera was the lead. He fell by the wayside after 30 days because he couldn't handle. So I took over for 6 months. I went into Rusty Starlight Express, actually in Germany, which is now the longest running musical theater show in the world. I think it's in its almost 35 years. Wow. And then I had a heart condition, which meant I had to stop because the doctor said you'd be dead at 30. So I had to take a year off. I composed shows. I had one show that was ready to go to New York and August 20, 2001, and then September 11th happened, everything closed, and my shop was, you know, changed. So anyway, but you know, it changed my direction. So I'm a composer. I'm also a pastor of creative arts. So I love to do the creative arts. Theater is my passion. So if I can bring excellence to theater and music to anywhere I go, that's really what I do.
That's fantastic. Starlight Express in Germany. Next time I'm over in England, I got to get over there. That's the one show in that theater I have to see because nobody else is going to do it anywhere.
It's amazing. I saw the original cast in 1985 of Les Mis, mm-hmm. of Michael Ball and Colm Wilkinson. All this fantastic, changed my life. Yeah. And then I think a year later, I saw Starlight Express in London. And they did the starlight sequence, you know, I am the starlight, all that stuff. And I was like, I've got to do this show. This is it. And I'm not saying it's musically Sondheim. It's not. It was such a spectacle. I loved it. And then by the time I was 26, I auditioned for it. Again, Arlene Phillips actually auditioned me. And I was there at the audition. And the choreographer, because I'm not a strong dancer, the choreographer kept wanting to move my, resume and my picture to the trash provided. But the MD who was there had worked on something with me in London, and he kept taking it off and saying no, and he kept to one side. So when Arlene came in and she saw us, she said, can you sing Starlight? They offered me the role right on the spot. Wow. So can you do it? And I was like, it was my dream role. It was like, yes, I did it. It was a super tenor role. I was not a tenor. It took me 3 months to train my voice to get that high. But the show is 6 weeks of training on roller skates, and then 6 weeks of then having to learn to dance on those roller skates. And then you're singing at 20, 25 mile an hour. We had plenty of injuries of people falling in front of the audience, people breaking their noses, their chin, you know, everything. And you learn it all in German. It's actually a beautiful show in German. It's very, very powerful. And I loved every second of it. We actually went back 2 years later as swings. Mm-hmm. And I swung. I swung for Rusty, Caboose, CB, Flat Top, all those kind of things that went on. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I would always have a love for it. I have a love for Bochum, Dusseldorf, Germany. I love the German people. it's just, and it's so unique, Germany. They have each town actually does a show. It's not like one town that has all the shows. You go to Hamburg, that's cats. You go to Munich, that's another show. We go to Bochum, Düsseldorf, that's Starlight Express. So you actually have to go to the town, and that town actually houses that particular show and only that show. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Very cool.
Okay, now you've made me even want to go more. Okay, I got
Yeah,
to figure out how to get over there.
you should go to London, book a train journey, go. I mean, because it's easy to get over there. You go to Northeast, which is Starlight Express first, and then you just travel. You go see the show's over there. They do Hunchback of Notre Dame. And Disney didn't want to bring it to New York because it was too dark. But well, I just said turn the lights on. But it's a fantastic show. Really, I think one of the best Mencken shows out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna.
Go, 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 go to Germany.
Yes. I'll wait till the end of the interview though. Then I'll start booking everything. But so I'm curious. Were you always into musicals growing up, or is that something you discovered a little bit later in life?
I think from the age of 10, I'm years old. So at the age of 10, on a Saturday afternoon in England, there was always a musical. It was an old 1940s, 50s. Usually it could be a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical. I was watching on Saturday afternoons, and then there was one on Sunday. My mum loved musical theatre, so she would always be watching it. One of my heroes musically is Barry Manilow. You would never believe that. I think he's not underrated because he is so revered in some circles. But to general public, I think he is underrated. He's a fantastic composer. He obviously we know he was a player for Bette Midler in the very beginning. But I used to listen to his albums incessantly, which is the reason why I took the piano. My dad would walk in and I'd be pretending to play the piano on the carpet while I'm listening to the speakers. While I write the songs, I'm playing. Do you want to play the piano, son? I was like, yeah, I do. And then from there, I would play the piano. So yes, music has always been around me. I didn't actually read very well up until the age of 13, but music made total sense to me. When I saw it, I could hear it, that kind of stuff. But yes, musical, it wasn't, I was in the hard end of East End London. Where it won't be unusual for your next door neighbor to be, having a fight outside and beating up and drugs happening on the estate, that kind of stuff. And I'm in my room listening to, Oh, What a Lovely Morning, So I was like an anomaly, but I love music. I love musical theater more so, obviously, than plays, because I believe plays are fantastic, but music takes you to a place emotionally that words just cannot.
For sure, for sure.
What I really love.
As a sidebar, did you get to see Harmony in New York?
No, I didn't. I did. The only thing I did get to see of his was the original production of Copacabana in London. And I mean, obviously there was the movie before that, which I loved, and then I saw Copacabana. I mean, it was frothy. There was no depth to the show, but there was some great hooks. I think "Dancing Fool" is a song in there that's amazing. I just love the way he writes. I love the way he arranges, and I do love his key changes. That's why you're always gonna hear a Barry key change in my songs.
Nice. Well, then let's talk about your songs. Let's talk about The Last Adam. Tell us a little bit about the show and, how you came about writing it in the first place.
Yeah, in 2008, my writing partner and me, Jonathan, and myself, we decided to write The Last Adam as a concept form. We just wanted to write a concept, and it went okay. And then we did the full production the year after, but we were working at a place where we will work for hire. So when I left there, they wouldn't give me the show back. We asked for it. It was interesting. They said, we're never going to use it, but we don't want you to have it. It was a very interesting time in it. When you write something, it's your baby, and it's like they're stealing. They're stealing. You feel like they're stealing from you. But anyway, over a course of a few years, my writing partner was actually asked to write a show for them again. So he said to me, What should I ask for? Money? What should I ask for? I said, don't ask for anything. Ask for them to write all of our shows back to us. That's the And they did. And they actually never used the show he wrote for them, ever. So we got all the shows back. So then I was living in New York at the time. So we decided, okay, let's start molding it more for the New York audience, not for a Floridian audience. Not as much different, but but a New York audience, so much more secular driven, you know, much more, okay, let's just tell the story with no agenda. So we started to rewrite it, got the music director Laura Burquist involved. She was MD for Allegiance. And then we got our first equity workshop, 30-hour workshop we did, reading. It went very well, went on to a 2-week workshop after that. And again, it was moving forward. The Bible Museum actually wanted to do it, but they said we want to change it a little bit to make it more religious Christianese, and I refused. I said that's not the reason for the show. That's, you know, I'm not doing that. So we had a chance. We always say when someone gives you money for a show, it's just because it's money, it may not be the right money. It's like the venue, it may not be the right venue. And so you always have to be aware of that when someone offers you, because your eyes go wide and like, yeah, I'm gonna take it. But then of course COVID happened. And then so everything halted. My son has been the catalyst. He's a 22-year-old guy. He was at university. He said, Dad, you got to do this show. You got to bring it back. And I was just exhausted. And he said, let's just try it. So he was the one that just said, let's bring it back. So we did a concert last year with some of our New York friends who did the workshop. And they liked it so much that they actually came back and did it for free, which I was very, very pleased about. And they've always followed us. They, you know. So, and then I went to a friend of ours and said, would you consider building the set and everything for us for free? And they would. They did. They did everything for free. I said, let's go for the tour. Let's do it in Florida, because we have a great community in Florida. We know we're connected with Floridian people. So this first tour is really about awareness to get the show out there. It's not like we're going to make money. We're not going to do it. We need to get awareness for investors, people to know about the show. And that's basically what we're doing for this one, so that we can take a hiatus for the summer and then revamp ourselves again for next year, because we're an unknown commodity. You know, it doesn't matter how long you've been in the business, the show is still unknown. And of course, it's about a guy that everyone has an opinion about, regardless of whether you studied them or not. Everybody has an opinion about this person. So it's already a diverse subject and causes division. And I just don't want to have any kind of agenda. I just want to tell a great story that is, you know, that everybody needs a story of hope and love and forgiveness and restoration, whatever form that takes in your life. It doesn't have to be in a religious context. It can be restoration with your father, your mother, you know, a broken relationship that you can still mend. This shows you that there's always a chance. There's always a time for restoration and forgiveness. And for goodness sake, we need forgiveness right now.
For
You
sure.
know?
For
So yeah,
sure.
so that's the history of the show. It's taken 14 years. Most shows take about 10 years to actually get from conception to, you know. But yeah, so it's a huge passion of ours. It's a life work.
Congratulations on that and getting it on its feet and the tour. So tell us what is the synopsis of the show itself?
Well, everyone always says to us, what's the last Adam? Who is the last Adam? So if you look at the account of what the Bible says, and you know, there's, whether you believe or not believe, there's a story of this first Adam that was made, you know, in creation. He didn't do as he's told. You know, he did something wrong, and he was expelled from the garden. So therefore, what has to happen then is there has to be another person that comes in that restores that relationship that the first Adam broke. So Jesus is actually referred to in the Bible as the second Adam. So he's the second one that come that would fulfill what Adam could not do. We called it the last Adam because it sounded more cool. You know, it's like the last Skywalker, you know. So, and also it doesn't say Jesus the musical, which everyone would like be like, ah! So it's intrigue. But it does tell, as soon as the garden happens, it then goes right to John the Baptist. And it tells the chronological story of Jesus, but we don't really concentrate on Jesus the guy. We concentrate on all the characters around him. And because the audience, if you're thinking that this Jesus guy is perfect, we are never going to be able to be that. But we can definitely see ourselves in the secondary characters around, and how they are broken, they're flawed, they're messy. Biblical writers, Christian writers don't tend to write these people like real people. They write them like the icons they became, which they weren't that at the beginning. They were the messy. They probably swore. They probably had gas. They probably told bad jokes. And that's what we concentrate on, the brokenness of these people and the arguments that they have. and what made Simon Peter do what he did? What did Judas, who in our show we love enormously, he just found himself in a situation that he couldn't get out of. And then he had to do what he had to do. So, and even the Pharisees, who are like supposed to be these bad guys, twisting their mustaches, tying ladies to the train tracks, they were never that. They were never bad people. They were just passionate about what they believed in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to preserve that. So we don't portray any of these characters as bad people. They just truly have a passion for their life story. And how does that interact with this guy, Jesus? How did it affect them? So it's really a character study more so than it is. It's definitely not a theological study. It's definitely like what made these characters do what they did, and how can I put the audiences, you know, in their shoes so they can see that we are just as messed up and broken as them, but there is still hope for us all, because even in our differences, we can come together.
Very cool.
So that's basically what we want to study. And basically the music comes first for us. You know, we're more of a throwback to the 80s, 90s, the Les Mis, Miss Saigon era, where the score is epic, and it has to have a good hook. It has to have a good melody, has to have a good reason for being there. Oh, and you know this.
Yeah.
Writing a musical is not the first draft. Your writing of the musical happens in the rewrites. It's the rewrites where the musical starts to get written. You know, so we've had a lot of rewrites, a lot of changes, you know, but the music is big, it's bold, it's in your face, it's very ballad driven. It's probably Frank Wildhorn on steroids, you know, but I love Frank Wildhorn, but I love our show. So, yeah. But there's gospel, there's comedy. The actors are comedic. We play the actors down to very young, like between 20, 16 and 21, disciples, which changes the dynamic completely of a show when they're not these mature people, which everyone always has. And I can prove by the text that they could have been as young as 15, which changes the whole dynamic of the show.
Yeah.
So hopefully that was enough. I do talk a lot, don't I?
For a podcast, that's good. I'm not going to complain. So, but I love all the things you said about that you've created humans, and instead of these like icons, these we have all these preconceived notions of who they are because they've been built up to this character, person's this and this, but we forget that, you know, they are just human. No different than us, with their flaws and their foibles and their greatness and their all the problems and stuff like that. And
when Simon Peter first saw Jesus, he told him to get out of his face, get away from me. You know, if this man was who he said he was, you wouldn't really say that to him. But Simon Peter said, "I will never leave you." And then the next minute, because he's afraid, he runs away and leaves this guy.
Yeah.
And in the end of our show, it shows that Simon Peter messed up just as bad as Judas. It's just that Judas chose an outcome that was obviously his story. Simon Peter was lucky enough to stay alive long enough that Jesus came back to him on a beach and said, are you going to do what I asked you to do? And Simon Peter broke and said, yes. And Jesus says, no matter what you've done, I love you. Mm-hmm. And I'll always love you. You know how powerful that is for us to be told that nowadays? That people, if people see us in our worst states and they still love us, that's a friendship. Mm-hmm. If they see us in our best and they love us, but you know, that's superficial. But I want our people out there in America and across the world to just say, no matter what you do, I will be with you. Even if you make the wrong mistake, if you make a mistake, I will tell you, but I will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need that. And I think that was the point of this show, that no matter how bad you mess up, there's always someone there that says, I got your back.
Very nice. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your writing partner, how the two of you got together and decide to go this way.
Yeah, so I was writing on my own. I'm a terrible lyricist. So I write the really bad, you know, no one is alone, I'm gonna go home, and then you know, it's all really bad. But I do have some good ideas. But this guy is a gifted lyricist. We started writing in 2003. We actually worked at this theme park in Orlando. So we started writing their material, like short 15-minute shows here and there. And then we did some, we actually do a lot of children's musicals. We've written like 9 children's musicals for summer camps, which we love because there's no, kids have way more imagination. They forgive us more. So they don't carry baggage with them. So if they see a story of, see, you know, they just love it. Whereas adults go, well, why are you doing it like this? It should be done, you know. So we love writing for children. So we've written children's musicals. It's just a relationship where we have no ego in the room. So if he comes up with a melody and I'm the composer and it's the best melody in the room, we use it. If I come up with a lyric, we use it. You know, we've always said, regardless of the show, we take 50-50 no matter what. There are some days that he writes more than me, some days I write 50-50. We've always had that relationship because we're in the same room creating together. And that's, I don't think I've written with anyone else. It's almost when you get that trust, that relationship, you go on into, it's like a marriage. It really is like a marriage because you're given and taken arguments, but we respect each other. We love each other. He's my best friend as well. And so, you know, we go to the table already knowing that we love each other. And no matter how badly you write something, I will still love you, you know? You know, and if he comes up with some crappy lyric, I laugh, you know, but I'm not laughing at him. I'm just laughing at the idea, you know. But and you don't get that. People are so ego driven nowadays. It's like I'm afraid to be creative with someone because you're exposing yourself fully to say, okay, this is an idea from inside of me, and you're going to tell me it's bad. So yeah, so Jonathan, I don't know if I've really answered everything, but he's firstly my best friend. And out of that, we just happened to write together.
That is so important in theater, and pretty much in life is the greater good, and the goal should be put above your ego. And like you said, you're not, if somebody says something just terrible, right? Something terrible, you're not laughing again at them. It's a moment, and you're not bad. You're just bad at this right this moment, and that's okay. We all do it. But I think a lot of people don't look at the greater goal and the greater good and the overall. It's like in theater, that's what I teach a lot of the students I work with. You know what? You may be the lead in this show, but you're no more important than the lighting person or the set
Absolutely.
designer, or you know what? Because without all of these other people, you are nothing. So
Absolutely.
you're all equal, and remember that you're just because you got the lead and you're on stage and everybody sees you, don't forget you
Yeah.
wouldn't be seen if that guy doesn't turn on the light. So
Yeah, and you won't be heard. Make friends with the sound guy.
right. It's
But the
so
thing is,
true.
yeah, I mean, you have to write, and you got to all those the listeners out there, composers, list, you have got to write a fair share amount of crap before you get to the good stuff. It's like digging for gold. You've got to get through the mud, you know. Don't be afraid to write that song that really, when you look back after 3 years, you're embarrassed because it got you to where you are now. It got you that was a terrible lyric. So what rhyme would have been better? It challenges you. If you just also if you want to be status quo, if you want to be average, then just, you know, don't write the bad stuff to get to the good stuff then. Just think everything you write is great. You can't rest on that. You've got to keep pursuing, got to keep studying. You got to keep studying other composers. How did they do something? You know, and then find your own style. You know, but yeah, I just think people are afraid to make mistakes and write bad stuff, and it helps you grow.
Well, I'm always curious. I always ask, was there a song that just came so easily to you guys that it just flowed out of you? And then was there a song that you just went, what am I doing with this? Where can I go with this? It just frustrated you to
Yeah.
no end.
In the show, there's a couple of songs. There's a song that John the Baptist sings called Prepare the Way of the Lord. And that came probably in about 2 hours. That was real fast. Because we were doing, it was definitely gospel driven, you know, it was a 1970s funk song. I probably it was a throwback to our admiration for Jesus Christ Superstar. But also we had this televangelist that we knew of at the point. So Jonathan just sat there in the room doing an impression of him, a really bad impression of him, because they all sing like, And they do this whole thing. And so he just started doing that. And I started playing and doing. So he was coming up with some of the melody I would refine. And he goes, prepare the way of the Lord. He was doing all this stuff. So that came really fast because we were just messing around. Ballads come pretty quick. Melodies come pretty quick for me. Usually when someone says to me, I've got an idea, it's this. As soon as they start telling me, I'm already hearing that melody in my head as they're telling me the story. Hosanna for us, the big Hosanna section. I think we've gone through five different Hosannas because it first became it was a song. And then the last version that it's become a scene with music, which is much better. A song, it didn't do anything. So that was the hardest one to keep refining because we wanted to move the story forward and it wasn't doing that. And I think that was one of the great advice we was given from one of our MDs. Is that if the song doesn't tell us something different about the character or more about the character, doesn't move the story along, then it's just a song for song's sake. So get rid of it. But my attitude also is sometimes there is moments in the show you just need to have a good song. You know, we don't do that gratuitously all over the place. If a song doesn't move the story forward, it doesn't survive. So most of our ballads, but I'm telling you, we pore over lyrics. Lyrics are like giving. Not that I know, so please don't anyone comment like giving birth. You know, I can only imagine what it would be like. You know, it's literally painful to me. We've laid on the floor and I'm going, no, that's not the lyric. You know, you just, and then when you get it, you're like, that's it. That's the one. And it's like, it's been there in front of our face this whole time. So lyrics is something we've pored over. The script, we've actually gone through every word together and changed it. We even know why Caiaphas says the word the. We've even gone through, so yeah, he wouldn't say that. That's just superfluous words. We've actually gone through it. So yeah, lyrics take a long time. Ballads are shorter.
I'm most critical when I listen to a show about lyrics. That's the one thing that always gets me. If it doesn't make sense or doesn't, whatever the reason, I'm like, oh, maybe no. Most people don't even hear it, unfortunately, but or they just accept these rhymes that just make my head explode. But yes, thank you for pouring over the lyrics and making sure
Oh, hold on a second. I didn't say they were good. I just said we pour over that. But you know, because even Sondheim would call him Sondheim would call himself a lyricist. He wouldn't call himself a composer. You know, he was a lyricist. And then and he gave also great advice, which I do often now, is I compose away from the piano as much as possible. Like I will sing as I'm running. I run a lot, so I will sing while I'm running, and I'll have a dictaphone, do that stuff. Because when you're sitting at the piano, you tend to get stuck in the same chords that you normally play, and you're in a box. So I write 90% of my stuff away from the piano. I come up with a hook, I write something because there's no boundaries, and then I go back to the piano, plunk it out, and then I then put the George factor with the chords that I would normally use, but the melody is free. And I tend to write for singers. Me and Jonathan pore over, like, he'll say this lyric. I said, no, the singer can't sing that on an eval. So we actually, not only do we pore over the lyric to make sense, we pore over the lyric that's how does that singer gonna sound saying it? It's gonna sound so caught when they're singing that. It's in the back of their throat. It doesn't make the sound that we want because we're singers ourselves. So do I wanna sing this? So we pore over that too.
So I understand the show's already done a couple of stops on the tour, I believe.
Yes, we
How was the reception for that? How did that work for you guys?
have had, to be honest, we've had, I would say, 98% positive reviews. You know, a couple of people that get back to us by email, usually if it's two or three, you've got a time set by, about five or six. Usually half of the people are going to say something, half people don't. So, but the emails that we get tend to be, I should stop reading them after the first sentence. Because everybody, as somebody who sees the show as a believer, they want a particular story served up to them. You know? And I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna have a commentary. What the church I believe has done over the last 15 years has actually told a lot of people what they're against rather than what they're for. And people hate the church, to be honest. So people have painted this guy Jesus based on what the church has done to these peoples and people groups over the last 15 years. I'm like, but that's not who he is. So we're going to just tell a story of this guy who taught love, peace, and grace. And, you know, yes, he came to bring a message. So we get more pushback, I believe, that we're not Christian enough. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Why isn't there a prayer at the end of the show? I'm like, because that's not what it's about. I'm telling a story.
Yeah.
If you want that, and listen, I'm a pastor. If you want that, there's Sunday morning. Go on Sunday morning to a church that's designed for that.
Yeah.
And I'm a part of that. And I love it. I love that. But this is a show. It's a musical. It has a certain way of being told. And this is the journey we've told. So the bad reviews we get are usually because we're not going Christian enough. And we have a certain agenda. Or they'll say it sounds very woke. And I'm like, okay, tell me where in the show. Tell me what piece of dialogue says that.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I just can't be bothered.
Yeah.
I just can't be bothered. Because then every show we get standing O, you know, and everyone's loving it. And so, but again, you dwell on those. I mean, if someone's gonna say a personal attack on an actor, which I've heard in an email, they talk about their appearance or something. I'm like, first of all, I should have stopped reading your email.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're talking about their appearance, whether they're skinny, fat, this, that, the other, you're coming from a place that I don't even want to talk about. You know? We get those, but we get positive reviews. But again, I think as a believer myself, we're going to get more pushback from the believing community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they expect it a certain way. But even The Chosen, the TV series The Chosen, which has shown that you can actually have excellent drama, excellent, you know, whether you believe. He gets in trouble because people say, you've got to have believers. You've got to have believers playing these parts. I'm like, no, he's got to have actors.
Yeah.
Actors who convince me that they are the part. That's who he has to have. I don't have to. I mean, it's the same argument where people say, you've got to have this person play this role because they're the only ones who know how to do it. I'm like, so does that mean I've only got to pick a rapist or a murderer to play a murderer? That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have a non-believer actor do this show because they're paid to convince me they are that person,
yeah.
You know? And at the level of, I get so sad, the level of Christian drama and theater is so average, you know, that they say it's good enough. I'm like, it's not good enough. We should be as good as, you know, Endgame or, you know, Infinity. You know, I don't know why I picked that movie. We should be as good as those. It's not that we're copying the world. We should be as good as them, and we're not.
Yep.
It makes me sad. It makes me sad.
You, unfortunately, you can't win. And for you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Right? It's and I find that unfortunate. And because you're telling a story of humans, and I think we're all whatever religion you believe in the end, we're all humans. As Shakespeare said, you know, if you prick us, do we not bleed? And I think that's the most important thing. And I'm not a religious person, but I can understand, you know, humans, and I understand the story, and you know, the story of Jesus, doing all that stuff. You know, because Jesus, I believe, was real for 100%, and did, you know, I may not believe they did the miracles and the stuff beyond, but the human part, I think we all can agree on, and that sort of thing. And unfortunately, you are going to get that small percentage, but I believe that standing O tells the truth, right? Is the factual reaction of people.
Yeah. It's an emotional response, but yeah, you're right. There's no doubting. History has told us there's no doubting there was a man called Jesus.
Yeah.
There's just three things you have to believe of him. He's either a liar, a lunatic, or he tells the truth. You know, you got to fall on one side. So, but this guy that told you to love your neighbor as yourself, and to turn the other cheek, and when someone asks for your jacket, give him your shirt as well. Go beyond what you should do. Tell me where that's radical. Tell me that I should be doing that anyway. Tell me that a person that looks different to me doesn't deserve the same respect and love that I get. It should be, and even the same belief system, that we should still start with with love and respect. Now, when someone comes to the table, we have an agenda to prove them wrong. I'm like, no, why don't you try and cultivate a relationship first? You know, once you cultivate a relationship, then you may have some equity in that relationship to speak about what you believe. But we go in there already just to say, I'm going to prove this person wrong. I need to change their mind. I need to do this. I'm just like, it's not your job to do that. It's your job just to love on these people.
Focus on what we have in common. That's the more important. Stop going right to the negative of why are we different. Let's figure out what we have in common and work from there. And
thank
you'll
God
find there's way more in common, obviously.
Yes, thank God we're different and we're not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, what a conversation that would be around the table having dinner. It'd be, you know, I'm reading this book about dysfunctions of a leader, of leadership. And, you know, they talk about how a leadership group have to have healthy arguments. They have to disagree, because you're finding what's best for the product. Now, it's based on like a trust factor, that everyone trusts each other. So therefore you can disagree, you know? So, but that's the thing, is we don't trust each other because we're coming to the table with a different agenda. But if I, with you, if I start a relationship with you and just say, okay, let me just talk about your background, talk about this, then we love on you. Let's go out for dinner. Let's do it for that. And then you're more open to say, well, why do you do what you do? You know? And I tell you my life story. I'm not telling you my life story so it changes yours, you know? But I know what has happened in my life. I know I've been delivered from healing and, you know, I actually have heart disease. I have heart failure, but I've been living with that for 9 years, you know, but I don't live my life letting that define me. So I just say, you've got to have a collateral relationship. You've got to love on someone.
We've gone off, you know, on a tangent, but I'm okay with that. This is an important tangent to go off on. And
it's important to tell people to, no matter how they look or live their life, you love them first.
Yeah. Which is what the central point of your show is, love.
You've got to love, for goodness sake, every one of them turned their back on this guy. These 12 guys, except for John, but even then he went into hiding as well. These 12 guys who said they would be with him forever, would take up the sword and fight this, when it came to it and they had to put their money where their mouth was, they all fled and hid in a room frightened. You know, they all did it. But you know what? This guy Jesus came back to every one of them and said, I knew you were going to do this, but I still love you. So how do we restore? How do we do that? So if somebody has done that to me in my life and someone has hurt me, I've got to first do a few things, like think about what I've done to them. How did I, you know, get involved in this situation? What did I do to make them? And then understand where they come from in their life, why they reacted that way. And that's what Jesus does. He understood why they did that. He understood them. He loved them. And that's the point of the show. Also, we stick a couple of really good dance routines in between. A couple of really good, you know, that's actually a really good thing to bring it back. It's like our show choreographically is the one that's actually getting more response as well, because it's very different. And I don't want to say, hey, because Hamilton did it. My son, who's actually a commercial hip hop dancer, he choreographed it. So you're not going to see a biblical drama with this kind of dancing in. So that's also very unique to this show, very unique. And I love that part of the show, and I had nothing to do with it. I wish I could take credit for it, but I didn't. I can't. All the good stuff I didn't do.
George, congratulations on the show. It sounds like it'd be so interesting. Go see it. And if I was in Florida, I would be down there. And
if you were down here, I would give you tickets.
Well, thank you. Well, if I'd met and you'd been running it like 2 years ago, then yes, I was in Florida. But unfortunately, Toronto and Florida are far away from each other. So
it is. And I got a couple of good friends actually in Toronto. Actually, the guy who played Greaseball opposite my Rusty lives in Toronto.
Oh. Well, if you're ever up here, make sure you say hello. And
I will. I'll just say hello, and then I'll.
Yeah, exactly. Just wait.
Hey, how you doing?
Bye. Okay.
Yeah, but hopefully, if next year, if that tour expands, then Yeah. And we'll keep in contact. And, you know, like our, try and get on our Instagram page and like, because we have a lot of content on there. A lot of our songs are up there. So yeah, just keep in contact. And I'd love to, again, cultivate relationships.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's move into that, because my next question was, how do we find out more about it? The website, the socials, how do we get to know more about the show?
LastAdamMusical.com is our website. That's where you can purchase tickets for shows coming up in May. We have Instagram, of course. Instagram is Last Adam. You can follow us there. You can see clips of our, we have like 30 to 40 second clips of some of the show, some of our concert from last year with our Equity New York actors. A lot of things that I talk about. Follow us that way. And just, you know, we definitely are looking for people that want to invest in the show at some point, you know, and, you know, because if without money, you know, it's like, you fail. You can't go forward. You got to pay these actors. So they're so needy. These actors, what do they need money for? Surely I could just give them a free meal, you know? Oh, anyway. So, so you can find us all on Instagram, Facebook, our website. So please follow us. That's, you know, just like everything. If you don't like it, there's not a dislike button on there. So don't worry about it.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations on the show. Again, like I said, it sounds fantastic. It was great meeting you. I'm very curious. When was the last time you were on roller skates? Have you been since the show?
I was on roller skates about 2007. I mean, I've been to roller skating rinks and I can still skate.
Okay.
I can still do turns. I can still do all that. But last time I put skates on about 12 years ago, my wife told me I look like a grandpa. So I was only like 38 and I was like, what? So I put them in the trash and my wife is so mad because I put hers in the trash too.
Oh no.
And she's got, every time we get into a disagreement, somehow that finds its way into the conversation. You threw my skates away. are we talking about the rent? How did that happen? We're talking about the electricity bill. Oh my goodness, it's so funny. And that's what most, I'm going to probably say something controversial, but that's what most people say when they want to get off point because they can't win an argument. They pull something. Yeah, you know, that's her go-to. Where's my roller skates?
I think you should buy a pair and then here you go. Just have them as a backup.
Here you go, darling. Here you go, darling. Actually, it's her 50. So I shouldn't say this. It's a very significant birthday coming up. I actually said the number. I could
buy it. You didn't say which one. You just said it's significant. I mean, it's not.
I actually did. If the people rewind it, I actually did say it underneath my breath. So I didn't rewind. But I'm going to, maybe I should buy us a roller skate, see what happens.
There you go. That's awesome. Again, thank you. I look forward to hearing where the show goes and let's Absolutely. Keep in touch and see what happens in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. It's been great.
No problem. All right. We were just speaking with George Livings, half of the creative team of The Last Adam, which is running May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Claremont Arts Center and May 9th and 10th in Longwood at Northland in Florida in 2024. So if you're down there, check that show out. It sounds like, you know, it's going to be for everybody. It doesn't matter what religion you are or age, race, or anything like that. It's a story of humanity and love, and which is what we all are. So go check that out if you're down there. Tune in next week as we speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion that is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.